special guest. This afternoon, we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2953. Welcome, Representative Robles. Look at you. With this, I should probably, can we do this during a public hearing?
Sure.
Acknowledge that we have a fee assessment jar for acronyms. For cell phones, please check those, and for tardiness. So, I guess technically I have a dollar too because we were not here to start promptly at 1 o'clock. So my apologies to those of you who've come. So I respect your time as well. So, Mr. Keller, would you please give us an overview of 2953?
Cell phones. House Bill 2953. Require a school district or school to allow a substitute teacher to meet with administrator prior to school district or school discontinuing the employment of a substitute teacher. Declares an emergency effective July 1st, 2005. It does not have any referrals.
And Representative Flores,
well,
because you have other committee responsibilities, we'll hear your testimony first.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the accommodation. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Linda Flores. I'm state representative for House District 51. House Bill 2953 is before you today at the request of a group of constituents, or one constituent and a group of her colleagues. And this has to do with substitute teachers. So with that, I really would like to have Ms. Kirkwood and others come forward and explain the essence of the bill, which is of importance to substitute teachers.
I'll wait until Madam Chairman comes back to being Madam Chairman.
I just lost one vote.
I know, and I tried so hard to do the protocol. I very much appreciate this opportunity to come before you, Chairman Flores, and I very much appreciate you sponsoring our bill. Thank you in advance. And members of the committee. I'm Yvonne Christensen. I'm president of OSTA, Oregon Substitute Teachers Association. We are here to testify in favor of House Bill 2953. This bill mainly plainly states that before a substitute is barred from a school and will not be in the job pool opportunity list, that they will be told why they have been barred in a timely manner. We feel it's only a simple matter of fairness to be told. This legislation gives no guarantee of a job, no guarantee that anything will be rectified. It is simply a common courtesy to say we have taken your name off the opportunity list. Such a meeting can clear up any misunderstanding, and perhaps if there was a false complaint, that could be cleared up. It only gives the substitute a time and a place to be aware and to say, oh, I thought I had a great day. I didn't write anything in my notes that anything untold happened. Many substitutes work most of the time. I myself work almost every day. And a lot of substitutes, this is their career, and they have a family to support. And they work in several districts. And even if they are barred from one school, it can be a financial hardship on that family. And it's only simple fairness to be told that you're not on the list. Instead of waiting, I don't know about other jobs, but as a substitute, if I don't have a job in the evening, in the morning I get up at the regular time and dress, because I'm pretty confident that my phone will ring. But if it doesn't ring for a month, I would wonder, what in the world You know, maybe the stars are out of alignment. Who knows, right? So it's only a fairness issue. And just very briefly about substitutes. Perhaps you're all aware of the profession of substitute teaching, but in Oregon, all substitute teachers are certified teachers by TSPC. We can have advanced degrees and years of experience, but we are per diem workers. We work on call. There are no health benefits. If a substitute works a minimum of 600 hours, they can request to be part of PERS. But as far as any benefits, there's no job security and there are no benefits primarily. And substitute teachers are paid individually by the schools that hire them. Usually it's monthly. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you. If there are any questions, I'll be glad to try to answer them.
Thank you, Ms. Christensen. And I would like to correct the record. Yvonne Christensen is my constituent. Phyllis Kirkwood is one that was in our office an awful lot. So
that's exactly a yes. There were a couple members that worked very diligently. Phyllis is retired, and as I said, I work, and so it was very handy. Plus, she's more knowledgeable. So
we'll take the testimony of the others, and then we'll open it up for questions after that.
I'm Phyllis Remy, a substitute teacher here in Salem. Some schools and school districts have a system of evaluating substitute teachers, which may or may not include communicating information to the substitute teacher. The proposed legislation only requires communication when a decision has been made not to reemploy the substitute teacher. As with the salary law under which this proposal is placed, it's a minimum requirement, and schools may do more if they wish. Monitoring the performance of teachers, including substitutes, is the duty of the principal, and some principals have estimated that an average of one conference per month may be needed. To state the reason for not reemploying the substitute and to allow the substitute to respond should require only a 10-minute conference or meeting. Secretaries and substitute desk clerks file the names of the substitutes they are not to call, but they have no authority to share that information with the substitute teacher. Sometimes they do call a substitute to a barred school by mistake when the substitute is unaware of being barred. And I can tell you, as a substitute here in Salem for 13 years, I've only been evaluated once, and it wasn't at my request, and it was a favorable evaluation, but I'm just letting you know that that doesn't happen. At least in my case, that. Thank you.
My name is Tom Heiser. I live here in Salem. I'm a teacher for Salem Kaiser District. I teach, well, I don't know, everything. And I've taught as a substitute. I've been called to teach from kindergarten through post high school. And various things which I am not qualified to do in terms of experience, but then they can't get anybody else. They'll say, "Oh, Tom will do it," and that's fine. I love teaching, and it's a real challenge to me to go into a classroom and see if I can make it work. I've taught Spanish. Do I know Spanish? No, but the day went by very well. They wouldn't call me back again because, of course, they tried to get somebody who was knowledgeable in that. I did receive a complaint because I taught drama, and I didn't do it well. I thought we had a good day. And at least Salem Kaiser has a humane policy of letting you know. But you know what? It was 2 months later, and I'm like thinking back on the day, and I couldn't remember. I did not have an opportunity to speak to those people about what happened that day. And they were correct in what they said, that I wasn't real knowledgeable on the subject. But I thought, well, okay, that's fine. That I don't need to go back to. But that was barred from that school. And that's unfortunate. As a full-time teacher, I remembered before school starting that I would have this nightmare that there'd be children hanging from the ceiling and wouldn't pay attention to what I would say. Well, it never happened while I was a standard teacher, but as a substitute, that literally has happened to me. When I walked into a classroom, they'd run off the previous two subs. They would not come back to that classroom. And I walked in, and they were hanging from the bars across the cloakroom. And, you know, it's a challenge to go into classrooms sometimes. I was able to bring that classroom into some modicum of control, but it was never as satisfactory. Teachers are evaluated over a long period of time, and if they are dismissed from a job, they have the opportunity to change, because they're given that because of the process that is legally provided for them. When we go in, we have oftentimes one day at the school. It may be the first time you're ever there, and it may be a bad day. If you are dismissed without at least being told the reason why you have no chance to improve your behavior, if it was your behavior, if it's because they just don't like you, well, I guess that's fair. You know, if you don't fit the system, that's reasonable. But at least you ought to know that, you know, your method of discipline wasn't appropriate for our school. So you can say, okay, and you can find out what it is. And that's reasonable. But to be hung up there, and this has happened to me a couple of times where I just was not called. And finally, I did took the initiation and called the district and said, what's happened? Well, we can't tell you. And eventually, about 3 or 4 weeks later, I'm called into the office, and they say, well, this is what happened. And they'll finish the investigation, whatever it was. And most often, it's a nonsense issue. But at least I've had the conference. But in the meantime, I've been out $1,000, $2,000 worth of work because of some administration inefficiency. Whatever. And so I think this would be a reasonable law to pass, that we would not be restricted from working until such time as a conference is held. Now, we're not talking about obvious illegal activity. That's covered under other laws. That doesn't need to even be mentioned under this one. But for complaints of how you teach or what you teach, that could be dealt with a little more humanely.
Madam Chair, I'm Phyllis Kirkwood from Beaverton. I'm a longtime substitute teacher and a past president of the Oregon Substitute Teachers Association. We believe that openness prior to a decision not to reemploy is good for both the school and the substitute, and that such communication would have made some lawsuits unnecessary because the substitutes felt that, oh, I've been fired. I have rights. Don't I have rights? And so they employ a lawyer and find out they don't have very many rights. And this would make it so that after the conference is over with the principal, they know that's as far as it goes, that the principal's decision is final. And I think that would be one thing that would really help the schools as well as the substitutes. This bill contains no just cause, no particular things like incompetence or immorality and so forth that are found in the fair dismissal bill. It could be any reason, not even relating to the task of teaching, but and it can happen when students will tell the teacher after you've been there, oh, the teacher did such and such, which would not be true, and then the regular teacher would write it down and give it to the principal, and the principal signs off without doing much research as to did this really happen. And so we're hoping that being able to have a conference would just clear up any misunderstandings such as that. We have worked on the process of communication before. In 2001, we introduced legislation which would have granted substitute teachers appeals under the fair dismissal law. This legislation was not successful, and there were two legislators that offered to work with us on a non-legislative approach. And so we were happy for their offer and had a meeting with COSA, the School Boards Association, and with the two representatives. And at that meeting, they asked us to go out to the school districts and find the programs that were already in place that were working. And so we did that. We found four or five programs that were working very nicely, and we brought them back. But then I think they decided that they didn't want to work with us after all, and so then they just refused to meet with us, and they said, well, there's not a problem, so we don't need to do anything. And so now we're back. This is a very minimal bill compared to what we had, but I believe it gets at the conference concept. The meeting with the administrator, we believe, will solve 99% of the problems that we have had. And you might think that we want to start small and then maybe another time we'll come back and add more at the legislative session. But I don't think we'll need to, because we feel that the problems will be solved. And besides that, we believe that our legislation is the minimum. Our salary is a minimum, and this bill is under that. And the districts who have collective bargaining have much more for the substitute teachers. And that's why they're excluded under subsection 5. Some of the things that those that have contracts, they have representation. If they receive one or two or three reprimands, they have to go to classes to learn the proper protocol. Then they have step appeals under grievance procedure and binding arbitration, which we don't think is really necessary to have in legislation. So thank you for listening to our testimony, and thank you for your support and sponsorship, and we look forward to meeting with you again. And I hope it's all right to say that Sally Sue Sellers, who had worked a lot on the lobbying and had met with quite a few of you, couldn't be here today, but she would like to have. She had a teaching job, and so she's there.
Thank you. Now we'll entertain questions. Representative Farr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm a co-sponsor of this bill, as you probably know, but yes. I just had a question for you, because, and each of you probably have a different answer, but have you ever met with an administrator when you were removed from that school's list, and did they explain to you why you were removed from the list?
Representative Flores and Representative Farr. I have, in my position as a representative of the substitute teachers in Beaverton, I have sat in quite a few of conferences of this nature. And yes, they will tell the substitute, you know, you've been late too many times. Or the room has been messy when you have left, or the lesson plans weren't followed. And it's usually a pattern that has been observed, mm-hmm. and not just a one-time thing. Oftentimes, during that conference, the person will pull out their calendar, and it's just full of days of substituting. And the administrator would realize, wait now, this is one of my best substitutes. And maybe this was just a bad day. They were in German class and they didn't know German. Or maybe they will try the person again and see if there are no more problems. But one more problem and you're out. And that kind of thing. But yes, the reason is usually told, yes. Mm-hmm.
I'd like to respond from a different note, if I could. When we were asked to go to the schools and ask what kind of programs, policies they have, I work a lot in North Clackamas School District, and they have a very proactive policy. So what we're asking is very, very minimal. Their policy is such, and we use them as an example in past testifying, that if it's been decided that a sub will be barred from either a single school or the whole school district, they will have a meeting with that sub and talk to them. So it is only, it is not something way out in left field that we're asking for. Those schools that are proactive realize that, you know, there are two sides to every issue. And I think, personally, that it's a benefit to the school district to be, to have a reputation as being proactive.
Follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So have any of you ever been in a position, maybe not personally, but where you've sat in with another substitute where the administrator explained to them the reasons why their name was being removed from the list, and they didn't have any way to rebut that decision, and that then the decision was final? I mean, the concerns of the administration were legitimate is what I was really getting at.
I know of cases, but I have not sat on the committee when a substitute has been told that their services, for whatever reason, we've dealt with different issues, sent letters as an organization in support. Phyllis, though, has sat in on meetings, only because a substitute will come to OSTA and say, we don't understand, and so then OSTA gets involved from that point of view, and OSTA will write a letter saying we don't understand the substitute, and to give all the details. And so Phyllis has.
Madam Chair and Representative Farr, I was working under a contract. It was a union there. When I've gone to other places, it's oftentimes the administrator would say, well, you've been barred from 10 schools. Now I'm barring you from the whole district. And if they get a conference, now some of the school districts have a policy of three times and you're out, and we don't have to tell you a thing. And Lake Oswego, I think, would be one of those. And the former Reedville school had that type of policy. So they knew up front that they were out and they would never know.
I'm sorry, I may not have framed my question right. I think I asked it in so many parts you lost track of what my real question was. But what I wanted to know was, do you know of instances where they did get an interview, an exit interview with the administrator, and the reasons that they were not going to be called back were legitimate?
Well, legitimate.
Yes.
Yeah. I talked with the human resource person at North Clackamas, and she relayed instances, not that OSTA was involved in this, but she said that, yes, she has brought a substitute in and said, I guess I don't need to say the details, but they were kind of weird, you know. So that does happen. And, yes, I did speak with the personnel at North Clackamas.
One of our principals had said, because we were going out to principals saying, well, how often would this be a problem? How many conferences would you need to give? And they had estimated about one a month, and that these substitutes were not up to quality, which we don't like to admit. But anyway, no, we don't. We want them to be laid off if they're not doing the job.
Thank you. Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess a group of questions, if I might. A group of questions, one at a time. Okay, there we go. In districts like mine, where I taught and worked at, this isn't an issue because there are so few substitutes. Everybody's always left on the list. But there are issues. How would you decide if you, I mean, a person might feel that they were not on the list because they weren't called a lot, because oftentimes teachers and others have the option of selecting who they would like to have come to their classroom in smaller districts. And so somebody may be at the bottom of the list and get called very rarely, but they still are on the list.
If I may address that, Representative Roblin. Most districts now have an automated sub-system caller. The teacher puts in their request, and in theory, if a teacher hasn't requested a particular sub, which every school has that privilege, the teachers can request whomever they like. And, of course, that by definition means that some work a lot and some don't. But in theory, if the teacher has not requested someone, then it will go to those that are that's their area. If it's a Spanish teacher, then the system will automatically pick the Spanish teachers. And then if within a time frame, if they don't get a positive, then they keep on going down. And in theory, because I've had school secretaries say we've gone through all our lists and we can't find a body, period, you know. So in theory, everyone should be called at least once in a while.
Oh, it would,
but that doesn't happen in reality.
Okay, next. One of the concerns that in talking to people that it comes out is this whole idea of this being a due process hearing, okay, that we've put something into statute, and I want to get on the record that the issue is we pass a bill here, and then this goes off, and it becomes administrative rules. Administrative rules can have a lot of other things in it that may or may not have the intent that was sent here. And so I guess the issue is if they have the hearing, you know, is there any intent that there's a way to appeal that hearing?
No. In the bill itself, there is not. No.
And that was not the intention here?
No. The intention is to only be informed.
Because
in a timely manner. Informed in a timely manner.
Okay. I think that's pretty much it for right now. Thanks.
Thank you. Representative Dolan.
It's the... in most cases, is a teacher barred or a substitute teacher barred, or are they just not called because another substitute teacher does an outstanding job and is clamored for it? Is that what's happening?
In theory, it could, but the individuals that we work with, the reason this is an issue to us as an organization is because of specific individuals that have come to us and asked for help. And we could, you know, if it was necessary, list names and places and times. And I feel it isn't a huge issue. It isn't a huge issue in the overall statewide system of professional substitute teaching. But even if it's one teacher that doesn't know why the phone doesn't ring for a month is a lot of money in a standard average family's budget. And especially, and we work on the assumption that if an individual comes to us, they feel pretty strongly that they didn't do anything wrong. That doesn't always work. We all know that. But basically, as an organization, we feel they came to us because they don't understand. We have a member in the Redmond area that came to us and said, I'm trying to figure out why. What have I done, you know? And so we only come from the issue that someone has come to us with this problem. It isn't, we don't sit in the committee and say, oh, we don't have anything to do this year, so we're going to take time off work to come in and do this.
Madam Chair, may I speak to that also? Representative Dolan. Representative Comp asked me the same question, and I believe that schools have their favorite substitutes, and that's fine.
And maybe
somebody came 40 miles to work for you this one day, and they won't be coming back. They wouldn't have to need a conference from you to explain. There are lots of reasons why you're not called. One is there's no work. Another is that you're not on a priority list of a school or a school district. So the administrator doesn't have a conference with those people. Only if the administrator has made a decision, and that's in the wording here, a decision, that one will not come back to this school, then that's when the conference would need to be held. Because there are some that are out there, you will call them on a rainy day, and it's okay. But if you don't want them, they've done something that it isn't according to your program and plan, then that's when you have the conference.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Any additional questions? Excuse me one moment. Okay. I'm sorry, I was getting clarification of his question. And so then, ladies and gentlemen, can you give us an idea of perhaps either over time or a segmented period of how many people you've had to deal with this problem?
Maybe Phyllis and I can confer in front of you.
Mm-hmm. Representative Flores. Of course, we don't hear about a lot of the problems. And so I thought that a better gauge of how many would be what the principals said they would have one a month, maybe, that they would deal with.
That would fall into this category?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And in a school, I guess an elementary school, maybe a high school would have more. I'm not sure. Representative Roblin probably knows.
We didn't have, I don't know that we ever had any. I mean, it was very, very rare at our school.
Representative,
we don't have a lot of.
I would love to work for Representative Roblin. He's a very nice, friendly principal. And
you will have to move.
And he would.
And
he wouldn't need a law. He wouldn't need a law to tell you if there was a problem.
Representative Bowen?
If you were to work for Representative Roblin, you'd be filing bills. But I'm not aware of this. 25 years as a superintendent, our problem with substitutes was finding enough. Okay. It was never finding or never dispatching one or putting one on. The word barred seems awfully hard to me. I'm not blackball barred seems like an awfully hard term to me, and I have no frame of reference which to come at that from. I can't imagine a list where a do not call list. That's
Oh.
That has happened to me. When I just didn't receive calls, and I called up again, as I said earlier, Tom Heiser calling, talking. I called up and I was given no information until about 3 or 4 weeks later, when I did have a conference, and I found out what the complaint was. Turned out the complaint was one that they were just taking time to investigate, and I was sitting out in the cold all that time, and was eventually reinstated. It wasn't that major a complaint.
Yvonne Christensen, as an organization, I think it would be fair to say that substitutes have come to us for help at least 3 or 4 serious issues a year. Those are issues that they come to us and say, we don't understand what is the policy. Just this morning, I had an email and said, the email said, I want to know what my legal rights are. Well, I had to write and say, actually, in quotes, there are no legal rights, and then went on with the issue. So as an organization, at our meetings, I would say this conversation comes up seriously at least once a year, that we feel, yes, it's still an issue, that we want to address it and spend the time to rectify this problem.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Our next panel will be Chuck Bennett and Jim Green.
I thought they were on the no-call list.
No, they're on the barred list.
And this is your exit interview?
Yes. We won't ask why.
Madam Chair, my name is Chuck Bennett. I represent the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. Madam Chair, we, as the previous panel mentioned, have been through this bill before and during a substantial interim, and have discussed it. And I think one of the problems we consistently have run into with this issue is trying to find the problem in some numbers that we could address, and it would justifiably be addressed by a statute that is as potentially sweeping as this one is. And Mr. Green will talk with you about the legal implications. I just want to talk with you just for a minute about sort of what is going on out there. I think you got a very good description from the teachers as to the scope of the problem. I think that the fundamental problem faced by schools relative to substitute teachers isn't trying to figure out how to keep them out of the classroom. It's that we have a shortage of substitute teachers. Every study that has been done by the University of Oregon looking at school district personnel needs shows that one of the shortage areas is substitute teachers. So there is not a wholesale barring, and I really have to object to that kind of language. That is not what's going on here. If there was that kind of thing going on, it certainly isn't showing up in the literature. We can't find that any other problem exists than this shortage. The level of the problem, based on the previous testimony at was based on the discussions that the group was aware of one per month with a high school principal. Let me just kind of underscore what was said there. One teacher per month being interviewed by a high school principal. In fact, the interviews are going on, and that was one of the problems we've had during the interim and during the last session that this bill was discussed. Everywhere we called, every survey we tried to do with school districts, we found that, in fact, school districts are exercising just common courtesy, which is if someone has a problem and it can be corrected because you don't want to lose this scarce resource, this valuable person in your community who's available and licensed to come in as a substitute teacher, principals and other administrators are bending over backwards to keep these folks in place. The kinds of issues that result in a failure to reemploy, and these folks are not barred, they're not dismissed, they're not hired, is what happens at some point. And the kinds of issues, I checked with several principals this morning to kind of get a feel for kind of, okay, what's the state of the art today? The state of the art today is that if you have a substitute teacher who comes in and there are substantial discipline problems in their classroom, they just can't control a group of children of the age that they were assigned, that they don't follow lesson plans, And particularly, the one that was underscored most commonly was promptness. They just don't show up for work on time, are the kinds of issues that result in real concern by principals, each of whom said they talk with the person about it. These are professionals interacting with other professionals, and we've been unable to find a capricious attitude on anyone's part relative to keeping folks in place and trying to figure out how to improve any shortcomings or problems like that. Let's see if I had anything else I want to. Oh, if there are other issues that come up, if a person is not called for a reason such as for some reason that would result in a possible action because of discrimination, those are covered by other statutes, and there's real opportunity. And in checking, kind of taking a look at what's going on out there in the literature, if a person feels that they have not been called back for some attribute that they believe is a discriminatory action, they have action at law. They can respond under other statutes. I guess ultimately the bill continues to us to be a solution without a really clear problem, and certainly not a problem that arises to the point that you would change completely the status of this employee group. And I'll let Mr. Green go into that. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jim Green with the Oregon School Boards Association. And I guess I'd start off with saying, you know, when I was in school, these folks have a very tough job. There's no question about that. It's a tough job to come in as a substitute. You're called upon to come into a class. You don't know the kids don't know you, and I know when I was in school, that was kind of the fun day we had as kids. So I apologize to any of the substitutes in the classroom when I was a student. But I wanted to let you in on a little dirty secret, and hopefully I won't get fined for this in this committee. I'm a lawyer. It's like
I say fine.
I think his parents are probably very proud.
or disappointed.
And when I look at this bill, I look at it in my position representing school districts as a lawyer that represents them on time to time. And there is some language in this bill that causes some concern. If I was a lawyer on the other side of the table, this is a dream bill, because there are terms in this that are undefined and leave a lot to the imagination of folks. Mr. Bennett's right. If we were to say to a person, you can't come back because we don't like your religious belief, we don't like the color of your skin, we don't like your sexual orientation, ORS Chapter 659 takes care of that. We are not allowed to do that. But in the bill as it's currently before you on page 2, and I believe one of the women who testified talked about a timely manner, a timely opportunity. What does that mean? Did we do it timely? Did we not do it timely? At the meeting, the administrator shall give the substitute teacher reasons for not reemploying and shall give the substitute teacher the opportunity to respond to the reason. Now, you all think, and I can envision what this is, but I envision it with my lawyer hat on versus some other things out there. One of the things I would do for my school district straight away if this became law, this changes the tone. Districts do this, and it's good practice, it's good policy, it's good manners. But the minute you put it in statute, it changes the tone. And I'd have to create a form for each one of my school districts that they would use with their administrators in every building to say, when did you tell the person? What was the tone of that conversation? Did they respond? And you'd have to have a line for that substitute teacher to sign off on. Because if we didn't do the things that are required in this bill, that's subject to some sort of remedy in law. And I'd have to have proof from my administrators in each one of the buildings that I would represent that you, in fact, jumped through these hoops. And, yeah, that may be a little bit of overkill, but my clients have been sued plenty of times over smaller things than this, and it's another form, it's another moment that an administrator has to take, and it's another thing that unfortunately a lawyer has to take a look at and say, how do I protect my client? And I understand that this is good practice and good manners, but when you put it in statute, it changes the tone, the exposure, and the liability for a school district, where unfortunately you have to get folks like me involved. And I do represent school districts, and that's what I'd envision doing with this, is creating a form. and doing training with administrators on this is how you fill this form out, this is how you make sure it's signed. If it's not signed, you know, there would be steps that you'd have to come through with policies and other things to ensure that everything was met so that they wouldn't have some sort of liability into the future. And right now, Oregon is what we call, other than in collective bargaining law, we're an at-will state. At-will employment means you're at the will of your employer. This bill would change that, carve out a niche for substitute teachers to take them out of every other category of employment that's currently out there other than collective bargaining, and make them an at-will employee plus. And we believe that that's not good public policy for the state. Mind you, it is good manners, it's good practice. We tell our districts they should do these things, but to put it in statute, it changes the tone. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there questions? Representative Stone.
Yes, Mr. Bennett, I'm under the impression that you did a survey. Maybe that's strong language, but you did talk to some schools. In that survey, did you get a notion for how many substitute teachers are used and how many substitute teachers have a complaint, and then how many substitute teachers would be, I'm not very excited about that word barred either, but not called?
Madam Chair, Representative Dallin, it would be a stretch to call it a survey, and the survey that we did over time was really several years ago, a couple of years ago, and I searched high and low for the results of that and could not find it, so I'd be reluctant to go there. What I did this morning was just call around, and what I found I caught a couple of principals in. I asked them about this, and in their cases, I spoke with Representative Roblin, Representative Comp, who were both principals, just to get, you know, did you do interviews? And the answers were always yes. But these are people with good manners. They took my call or stopped and talked in the hall with me for a moment. So, you know, and that's really what this is about. But I'd be very reluctant to go into any numbers at all. I'm perfectly comfortable with the numbers that the Substitute Teacher Association brought out of their hearing from three people a year. These are people who believe that are in need of some sort of counsel. I'm willing to accept three a year. I'm willing to accept that we're counseling one substitute teacher a month and applying at least the spirit of this law, which is talking with people about how their performance went. And I just defy anyone to take those statistics and arrive at a problem that demands statewide statutory solution. I think that's what's fundamentally wrong with this bill.
Representative Farr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chuck, how would you feel if the bill was amended? Because it sounds like, David, the problem that you have with it from a lawyer's point of view. Is the timely opportunity. That particular phrase is what's causing some of your consternation. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Farr, I think fundamental to our consternation is what problem? It suggests there is a problem that just doesn't exist. Secondly, though, and I think Jim spoke to it.
Jim, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
David's my evil twin. It's okay.
The one the parents like.
Jim's the nice, or David's the nice one, Jim, is that you would be changing the nature of this specific employee classification from all other unrepresented employee classifications, from an at-will to an at-will plus that is not a very clear plus. We just don't think that's a good idea. As was mentioned, you can join bargaining units when bargaining units are willing to take you in. I believe Ms. Kirk mentioned that she was a member of the Beaverton unit. There's Beaverton, Portland, and Eugene have bargaining units that include substitute teachers. One of the solutions, and not one that apparently has been attractive to the substitute teachers, is that they become involved in their local either OSEA, OEA, or AFT bargaining units and participate in that way. And we, you know, obviously no objection and certainly no right to object to that. But to come in and try to change the condition of employment through statute just doesn't make it. And particularly if this were a rampant problem, yeah, we should really be talking to you. But we can't find, and I don't think the substitutes have defined, other than a few anecdotes involving 3 weeks of investigation by a school district, as one of the substitutes described, that they weren't employed, that's the problem. I'm sorry, that just doesn't make it for us as a for this issue, for this level of solution.
Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you see, because of the ambiguity of some of these words or the lack of definition from the court, that the Department of Ed would need to make administrative rules that would define some of those?
Madam Chair, Representative Roblin, I'm not, you know, it doesn't, there's not specific authority to either the Department of Education or the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission who licenses these individuals, but they don't need a specific one. They have a general broad OAR, Oregon Administrative Rule, writing authority to handle these matters. And I think that because of some of the language that's in here, somebody would have to define some of these terms, and at least, you know, for the short time, you would leave that up to school districts and their lawyers to define those terms, and then you'd have somewhere along the line a battle over the terms, and you'd have to have some definition of those terms. And for Representative Farr, it's not only the timely opportunity language that's in here, it's also about the who were previously employed by a school district. How previously employed? 5 years ago? 10 years ago? 3 years ago? As Representative Roblin said, some folks just get to the bottom of the list for a variety of reasons. Maybe the teachers who've had them in their classroom don't like them to come back to their classroom, whatever those reasons may be. But does that rise to the level of not being reemployed because they haven't been called back and they worked for the district 5 years ago, they go off and get a job somewhere else, and then they come back to substitute? Do we then have to say, well, we're not going to hire you back and give them all the reasons? Also, it's the opportunity to respond. What type of response? Does it have to come back in writing? Is it oral? And there are things there. One of the things I'd tell you, if a district came to me and said, Jim, help me with this statutory requirement, I told you already I'd create a form, and everything would be in writing. Because as a lawyer, it's a paper trail. If you don't have that paper trail, your district could be in a lot of trouble, and that's what that bill, this bill somehow creates, that because of that potential liability for school districts. I wouldn't feel comfortable not telling my client, you create that paper trail.
Further questions? One last question, Mr. Green. Then, in your capacity as attorney, if you would indulge me, are you a good attorney?
Madam Chair, there is no such thing as a bad attorney.
that's determined upon which side you sit.
It's determined a little bit on the basis of the client, and is that before they got the bill or after they got your bill?
That is better. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Mr. Marquis, did you wish to make any comments today? Thank you. Is there anyone else that would wish to testify on Health Bill 2953? Seeing none, then we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2953. And I think that is what we were scheduled for today. And House Bill 3189 has been removed from the agenda. So with that, committee members, enjoy the freeness of 1 hour and 4 minutes. We will adjourn our education committee.
All right.